an interview with Leonard Eisenbud, a retired member of the physics department at Stony Brook, at his home in Sarasota, March 21st, 1987.
Suggest that we go quickly through some of these questions and then freewheel after that.
Okay.
Well, you've given my name, physics, and rank now emeritus, then professor, and originally chairman.
Originally. You came initially as chairman of the department?
Yeah.
What year did you come?
58.
In 58,
the second year. The institution I came from, Bartol Research Laboratory, and research physicist.
And where was that?
Bartol. That's in Swarthmore.
In Swarthmore, Canada. I see.
Primarily responsible. Well, I've been looking for something in the New York area. I wanted to return to academic life. I heard about the beginning of SUNY at Stony Brook. Well, not at Stony Brook at that time, but and then heard that Francis Bonner was coming.
Yeah.
And I knew him from 10 years prior to that, and Brookhaven.
I see.
And so I called him and talked to him about it. So I guess if anyone individual is responsible, then Francis
Bonner of the chemistry department.
Yes.
Formerly at the Brookhaven National Laboratory.
Right. Yes. He was at that time an Arthur D. Little, but
I see.
Why did you come? Well,
who interviewed you for the position?
Leonard Olson.
Leonard Olson.
Quite good machine.
Yeah.
Leonard Olson was the dean, and he interviewed me with about a half dozen people that were on the faculty at that time. I remember being interviewed in Co Hall there in that
desk.
Why did I come? What factors were most important? Well, as I said, I wanted to return to academic life. The location was what I wanted. Being close to Brookhaven Laboratory seemed to make it natural for a physics department. It would be easy to attract people. I liked the area. There was something, of course, something exciting about starting a new institution,
that's right.
But which added to that, and just the general beauty of the co-estate also was instrumental.
Yeah.
Well, it's my understanding of the purpose behind the creation of Stony Brook. Well, that, personally, I never really very well knew. At that time, it was presumably a teaching institution. That is, it was primarily designed to get teachers of sciences.
For the secondary schools.
For the secondary school, right. Yes.
That was the earliest concept.
The earliest concept. We all felt that certainly would be rapidly expanded. And I presume that, I don't know what evidence there was for that, but certainly everybody there talked in terms of something other than that developing rapidly. Well, impressions. The campus. extraordinarily pretty, of course,
yes,
at that time. And although facilities were few, the general sense of the surroundings was very attractive. The location was very attractive.
This was the Coa State.
The Coa State, yes.
Yes.
The leadership, well, Dean Austell was, Dean Olson was extraordinarily enthusiastic and was devoted to the idea of creating an institution of great merit. And his vision, of course, was something that went close to the Chicago school at that time.
He came from Chicago.
Yes.
I think he'd been an assistant to Carlson up in the central office.
Yes, he had been. And then came down to head this institution, or to direct the institution. He was really a very dedicated man. And that was both a good thing and a bad thing, because they quickly got into problems with people in the institution who were opposed to the Chicago type of conception.
What about you?
Well, I must say I never took that whole thing very seriously. You know, when you have a new institution, you don't know where it's going. And that so-and-so has a particular conception. I tried to be friendly with both sides of that issue until it got really sticky. But, well, anyway. Now, as far as leadership, however, the early leadership ran into serious difficulties with President Lee. And that was peculiar. I recall that, I don't know whether one is interested in these.
Well, I think we've got to get it, as much as we can.
Who hired him? Who hired him?
Well, how did he happen to come?
They were looking for a chairman of engineering. And I think that Olson had interviewed him for that position, or as a prospective a person who might come into that position. At that time, then, there were, I think, indications from the administration of, or suggestions from the administration of someone. Excuse me. Hello? But what happened was that, as I recall the story, Olson did not like the suggestion of the central administration as to a possible president, and said that he had interviewed a man, Lee, that he thought was better than that president, that suggestion.
You have any idea what? Who?
I don't recall who that was at all. I don't think, I'm not sure they ever knew. But the next thing he knew, and much to his regret, the central administration had appointed Lee as president.
That's right, sir.
And then Lee came in, and there was a great division about Lee. I thought that Lee was rather a catastrophe myself. Although,
why? Do you have any reasons that you could stay?
For one thing, his notions of the possible were grandiose beyond any reasonable expectation. That's all right to be grandiose, but and also he didn't work at it. He was. I give you one example. I had an application for the physics department, Mandel Balazs, effectively at that time.
And I thought that that was a good application, but he had asked for the position with tenure. And where did he come from?
And
he was then at Princeton. I think he was at that time connected with the project for nuclear energy at Princeton. He wasn't on the faculty, but on the that group that was on the accelerator project. I went to Lee with this statement that that there was Nando Balazs. I thought he was a very good man, but it was a serious appointment. He was appointing a man with tenure. He really never looked at the application. He said, I trust you, go ahead. Now, I thought that that was going too far. It was nice to be trusted, but nevertheless, he should check. And he didn't. And I felt that there was a good deal of that sort of thing. He would send a memo that we were going to appoint people like an enlisted six Nobel Prize winners in various fields. And there was just no way in which that could conceivably be done. He wasn't working at foundations. He was working at dreams. All this could be tolerated, but I think that finally he got into very serious disputes with Olson and Alstall. That also was something that one could stand.
Do you have any idea of what the nature of the disputes were?
Whether it did involve students or
curriculum?
A clash of temperament. I think that just how it worked out in detail, I don't know what that situation was. You know that Lee asked if I would be acting as dean of the graduate school at that time. And after thinking about it, I decided I didn't want to do it. Simply because I felt that he was erratic. And
he was what?
Erratic.
Erratic.
That I couldn't trust his judgment. That it would be a position in which you would be floating and you wouldn't know what it was you were doing. It came to a head with his abrupt firing of Alan Alstall, who was then dean of students. I had been friendly with Alan Alstall when we got there, but the whole community was quite friendly except for these wars that broke out. Just in the middle of the semester, he abruptly fired Alstall, told him to leave his house, which was on the campus, and so on. And at that point, I resigned from the chairmanship of the department and wrote a letter to him and copied to the administration saying that I thought that this was a little retired. Well, that was about the time in which the whole thing blew up and became a cause. Lee was fired and so on. And then, of course, we had temporary administrators or acting administrators, of you, which you were one.
Yeah.
What events, what persons? Well, after the first couple of years when I was chairman and when the department grew slowly and we had instituted the beginnings of a graduate program, at least the planned graduate program, I resigned from the chairmanship and I got Alexander Pond hard-bound?
Yes, I heard.
You hard-bound.
And that, of course, I think a very important step in the development of the university. He is very active, of course, in the building department and significant person.
Well, indeed, it was, I can take credit for a little more than that. At that time, they were still looking for a dean of the graduate school, and the suggestion was made that John Toll,
would be dean of the graduate school.
Was that Alex's suggestion?
I don't know who had suggested it. I remember hearing about it from a member of the department. And
Arnie Feingold was there by then.
Arnie Feingold was there. Fox was there. I think it was Fox that told me this, because I think he may have been acting as acting dean of the graduate school at that time. In any case, I'd heard that Toll was being considered, or had been considered, but was not going to take it, or something of that character. And as he said, why not ask him if he would be president? And I met with John Toll shortly after that in New York. We had a lunch together in a Chinese restaurant. There was a meeting of the Physical Society of New York, and we talked about the possibilities. He was asking me about the nature of the university, what had come on there, and so on. And I think Alec and I sort of nursed him along in the application, or in the question of his accepting the presidency.
I was there then. I remember meeting him at the time that he was being considered for the dean of the graduate school. There had been others looked at for the presidency, for instance, Lauren Isley. Had been considered at one point before I got there, as I understand it.
And had also Bentley Glass.
Really?
Yes. I had been considered at one time, although...
Did he ever come to the...
Now, well, what happened with Bentley is that there were a couple of letters, one or two letters, which put him down so much that it was never followed up.
Remember what date this was? Was it 61 or 2?
Something like that. Yes, 61.
It was fairly early. Was he considered for the presidency?
He was considered for the presidency, and we had letters. Letters had been requested, and at least one of the letters said something like he couldn't administer his way out of a paper bag.
Came up, and
I briefed him at Planting Fields for 8 hours as to what he was going to find up in Albany, the time of his admission, the kind of people he was going to deal with, because there was a vacuum there.
Yes.
Hamilton was gone. Gould had not come. And he went up and saw Larry Murray and Harry Porter, I think. Then when Gould was appointed, Judd Sullivan said, and this was the function of the council, was to recommend who should be president.
Yeah.
Said he was going to tell Gould to go nowhere else for president until he had seen John Sullivan. That's my side of the picture.
Right? Yeah.
Well, in the course of these negotiations, Alec and I met with him at my house and Alec's house on a couple of occasions. Talked about the situation at Stony Brook, what its possibilities were, and so on, as we saw it. Mm-hmm. What did you think the possibilities were? This is getting back to 7, I guess, or 8.
Well, I think at that time, there was the feeling that...
63 or 4.
Yes. The things were opening up, and it seemed to be opening up rapidly. But the building program at Stony Brook, Rockefeller apparently was very much interested in promoting the university, and with that kind of backing, that one felt that things could go forward. There was, I think, considerable optimism at that time about the future growth. Well, there was reason for it.
What do you think the reasons were, as you saw them? Proximity to Brookhaven.
Now, there's proximity to Brookhaven. Well, the backing of Rockefeller, who was an Anglo governor, and
Phi Beta Kappa from Dartmouth.
Although I wouldn't have bet my life on it, but on the prospect. And a guy like Alec Pond, who was really willing to bet on it, that he was going to make it go. He felt that the sky was the limit, and all that you had to do was somehow show them that this could be done, and people would see that it was possible, and they would grab it.
He had a vision.
He had a very strong vision, and was optimistic about its realization. And Toll also had something of this, and had very strongly his own sense of accomplishment and that what he could do with Africa. He was ready to devote heart and soul to the task. They had a strong vision of a growing university.
Understanding of your own place in the future of Stony Brook.
Well, I don't know. Why do you think you were appointed?
Well, at that time, we were certainly looking for strength in the sciences, and people were not that easy to find. What expectations did you have when you came? Research or both?
Teaching and writing. I had not been successful in research, and I hadn't proposed a century to leave it. But I'd wanted to write.
these expectations worked out both personally and for the institution?
Well, personally, I think they worked out very well. I've been happy at Stony Brook. I've enjoyed working there. It's hard for me to say how they worked out for the institution. I think I've made contributions to the institution and contributions to the physics department to the growth and development of it.
Were you involved with the appointment of Max Dresden, for instance?
Not immediately. I knew Max and, of course, met him when he came, but I think that this was engineered mostly by Halleck.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing Halleck and he together, I think Halleck's vision produced the idea of the Institute of Theoretical Physics and Don Yang to head it. That was really a most remarkable crew.
Well, that was John Hall also involved in that, wasn't he?
Certainly he was involved. I know it only from Alec and Mike's point of view,
I say. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was a real coup.
Yes.
Yes.
And of course, that was a great boost to the physics department generally, to the university.
Alec, I think, was an experimentalist.
Yes.
And he came from St. Louis?
He came from Washington University.
Washington University in St. Louis.
He was a student of Dickey and, at Princeton. My activities were confined mainly to the Stony Brook campus. I had some relations with the central office through the Research Administration. I was a member of that group that went over there and reviewed research grants and proposals.
I see.
And at one time I was vice chairman of that group somewhere in that. So that was all that I did with respect to the
this is the research, what did they call it?
Mort Grant's group?
Yeah, Mort Grant's group, yes.
Briefly, I was, in the early years, somewhere in there, while Ross was dean, I was an associate dean for the sciences. Could be made, but then I decided I didn't want to do it. I'm a retiring fellow.
How did Stan Ross work out?
Gee, I don't know. You know, I find it very difficult to make such judgments. Because I don't see in the interior of the office. I know that there are people that can say, well, he didn't do this, or he didn't do that, that he should have done. But I don't know what the boundary conditions on him are. And so I don't try to enter into those judgments unless they directly influence me. And I don't think that they did influence me at that time.
You know that he's died?
No, I didn't know that. No. When did that happen?
Well, a year or so ago, at least, last time I saw him, he was using a cane and
nothing.
And I don't know what the hell that was.
What do you feel you had accomplished at Stony Brook by 1971?
Well, I'd got the physics department started. I've got Alec Pond appointed. I've gone through the business of building design initially, although that didn't work out terribly well. Nevertheless,
we did what we could about the original design.
Did you have input on the design of the old physics building?
Yes.
Very little. With whom were you working then?
Was that Steve or
Ellen Stevens up in the architect's office? Or?
I've forgotten the name of the man or the group. It was an architect's office in New York that we would go in and visit.
Boris Walker?
Yeah, Boris Walker.
It was Boris Walker.
Mm-hmm. I remember being terribly annoyed by we had built the physics department and we had had very little input except what kind of tables to put into it. And they had called me after the building had been completed and said, where could I find out some information on how to build a physics building? Their restrictions on that building were so severe, they paid almost no attention to it, and they had so little profit in the enterprise that they didn't put any great effort into it.
This was Boris Walker.